Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together, whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.
Hello and welcome to another episode of My Property World. Today I'm joined by John Paul. John's been on a previous episode where we did a profile, went right through his whole life. He's built up a business in the northeast of England where he now has 11 lettings and estate agency branches, a personal portfolio that's well over 30 properties, and is involved in a number of other ventures. So great to have you back on, John.
Thanks, Will. Thanks for having me again.
So, John, what's the best way of getting hold of you if someone wants to look you up and follow your tips and tricks that you regularly put out there?
Yeah, cool. So I know last time I said go on Instagram. This time I'm going to say try and follow me on Facebook. So just John Paul, friend request me on Facebook, and providing you're not a weirdo, I'll accept.
Okay, so any weirdos, disregard that last comment. okay, so we're going to be talking about buying an estate agency for a pound. So what sort of estate agency, where is it, and what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, so it's crazy. So, you know, you can buy businesses for literally a token pound of, you know, consideration. They are few and far between, but it's not impossible. Now, before we did it, I thought it was just BS, to be blunt. But yeah, so effectively it was an estate, it was a letting agency, and that was based in Halifax. And it was a friend of mine had come up to me and sort of said, who's a contact? And he said, look, we've got this opportunity to buy this letting agency. The person wants to retire. They've got a few personal problems. I think it was a divorce or something. But they want to retire and get away. So I'm going to take it on, but kind of use the Castledean banner, which is the name of our core brand or the original brand that I first started. So I said, yep, no problem. And so the chap was Roger. He went in and he started branding up as Castledean and he started to run it.
Now, so just in the background, what did you have going on? So at this point, you've got, three, four branches roughly?
Yeah, probably about four or five branches. I hadn't started. I've got a coaching business. I hadn't started that yet. I was building my portfolio up, and I had this dream of being like a Belvoir or Northwoods with franchises. So effectively, this was my first foray into franchise is a strong word. I would say probably is a license, mm-hmm. where somebody would take on our brand name, our processes, procedures, and run it as if it was a Castledean, and then you know it was.
So it wasn't just another branch; it was a quite a big shift in what your model had been up until that point.
Up until then, yes, yeah. So it was a case of I knew that growing a business by acquisition or cold starts was limited by the amount of cash you had in your back pocket. However, by the franchise model, you could grow as quickly as people believed in you and wanted, you know, found out a location. So we tried it on a couple of places, Halifax being one of them. So this chap had came to us and said, I've got this opportunity. We want to open this, but we want your procedures, your systems, your training development, your management, your KPIs, prospecting. And we said, yeah, fine. So he took it over. It was a failing business, all right. It was really, really tough. My fault is I didn't understand how bad this business was. It was called PROMA, which stood for professional management, which was the biggest example of irony I've ever come across in business because it was far from professional.
Give us a couple of examples.
Oh, how long have you got? I'll give you. Yeah. So basically, I had one bank account, and that bank account had all the deposits going in and out. It had the rent going in and out, the contractors' payments going in and out, the wages in and out, everything else going in and out. It was just one bank account, which is, you know, it's a joke. So when I think my business partner or ex-business partner got in, it was way too deep for him. And to be fair, he had a few things going on that his time in his life, he just said, look, do you want it? I said, well, I'm not going to pay any money for it. He said, well, listen, you can have it, just buy it for a quid. So I bought it off him for £1. And we had to do a bit of a reconciliation to see how much money was owed to landlords and owed in deposits. So we got a figure, and I ring-fenced that figure from the other business and put that into the account, so to pay back any deposits or any landlords or what we thought. So as and when the tenants had left or landlords had asked for stuff and, you know, paid rents and what everybody got paid. So it was around about 16K altogether. So we got paid. So we bought it for a quid. We had to invest 16K, but over the next 18 months, we got that money back. So, you know, out of the profits of the business. So, and then it got to the point where myself and my she was then the area manager, but my now MD, Adele, we were going up and down. I think she was up and down once or twice a week. I was up once a week. We had a couple of staff issues, hadn't gone well. And then I think it was after about 20 months, 21 months, I just decided to sell the business because it was causing a lot more. We couldn't grow where we were because it was about an hour and a half away in the car. Mm-hmm. It hit traffic wrong. It was two and a quarter hours.
Mm-hmm. And that's each way.
Yeah, that's each way. And, you know, we were stopping overnight with Premier Inns and all sorts of stuff. So I decided to sell it. And I remember sitting with my wife and we were talking about it. And I phoned Adele up on the night. It was just after she finished work. And I told her, and she literally screamed with joy down the phone. So I knew it was the right decision. So we just then went on the path of trying to find a buyer for it. We phoned up a couple of agencies, transfer agents, and it was a pretty smooth process. We got rid of it probably within a 10 to 12 week process.
Wow. Do you think it was better prepared for sale than when you brought it?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. There was the gas checks were done. You didn't have to do electrical or legionella checks back then, but it was in a good position. It still wasn't in our business now, because you're still going to have a lot of legacy things that were coming out of the woodworks. It's a bit like you don't know what you don't know. So every now and again, we thought we paid all the deposits, and then all of a sudden somebody would say, right, I've paid my deposit, there's my receipt. And you were like, I'm not even going to argue with this one, just pay him, get him to say he's got it, move on. So we made sure that by the time we sold it, all the skeletons in the closet had been well and truly aired. And we were very confident that we were handing over, because we had guarantees and all sorts. So we had to be confident. We didn't want to get hit with things later on. Mm-hmm. So we sold it to a reasonably sized business in Yorkshire, had about a dozen branches. And it was a great day when we signed that paperwork, I can tell you.
Right. And do you mind us asking, what did it sell for at the other end?
Yeah, so 60K. So we got 60K for it. I mean, when we took over, it was about 100 houses, and we lost quite a few in the first couple of months, and we went down to about 70-odd, and when we sold it back, it was back up to about 85, 90 properties. To be honest, Will, we were just maintaining it. All we were doing was going into firefight and then maintain it. We couldn't grow it because we were 100 miles away, or however many miles away, 2 hours away. So we could never grow it. And if we had the right staff, we could have done, but it was we just couldn't get the right staff. It was in a very strong demographic area, mm-hmm. King's Road or King's Cross Road in Halifax, if everybody knows it. So it's a very, very much Asian-dominated area. Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult to get staff because I'm a white male with an accent like this. So we just couldn't get the right staff.
Mm-hmm. And what was your what would you do differently from start to finish again?
I wouldn't buy it even for a quid. It was a tough one. I definitely wouldn't buy it because it was too far away. I would buy something like for a quid that was local to us, But it was the travel time that killed you. It's not a great trip, that. There's a lot of back roads and alleyways and stuck in traffic to get to it. It was a tough drive. So I wouldn't buy somewhere so far away next time.
Right. And in terms of why do you think the sale process was so smooth on the other end?
So we tried buying it with a corporate, and they just took their time on everything. And they'd send you a list of what you wanted, you'd give them it, and then they'd come back and ask for more and for more and more. And it actually, I was keeping my options open. So it was a large, but it was an independent. So the large independent, I'll tell you, it was Ryder and Dutton who bought it. They were just really easy to deal with. They were a bit nervous because they knew about the issues and the problems. The purchase price was quite, we agreed it quite early on. And I had this other company, it was a big, big corporate. So it was Countrywide. I wasn't going to tell you, but I'm not bothered. So it's Countrywide. So I was dealing with them, and they took so bloody long. So mm-hmm. I told these guys that, look, we've got an offer of, we hadn't even got the offer stage. That was it. These guys are interested. Mm-hmm. Literally a 12-week process. The week after we completed on the sale, Countrywide came back and said, right, we're ready to progress it to the next stage. And I went, I'm sorry, mate. We sold it a week ago. Oh, really? Really? Why didn't you tell us? I went, well, not being funny, you hadn't even made an offer yet. Mm-hmm. So it's like going to view a property. If you don't make an offer, it's still going to be marketed. Mm-hmm. I marketed it, you know, you didn't come back in time. So it was just a good process. The guys I was dealing with, I'm forgetting the guy's name. He was the boss at the time, the MD. Dead well thought of, really good guy. Had some good conversations with him, and he was honest. And he shook my hand and I shook his hand, and what happened off the back of that.
Right. And would you, in terms of what changed in your thinking with your own business model as a result of this deal?
Compliance was a big key for us. We've always been pretty hot on compliance, but after seeing what went on in that particular estate agent, it was very much, whatever business you're in, make sure you've got a very, very good understanding of the legislation that applies to you and your business. And we just really, really honed in and focused on training our staff to understand that. So there was no excuses, absolutely none whatsoever. And just ring fencing client accounts and stuff like that, which we were anyway, but we made sure it was reconciled more frequent rather than monthly. We did it, pretty much every day automatically. And it was just making sure the compliance and legislative aspects of the business is 100%. If you make a mistake, that's fine. We all make mistakes. And your clients are probably quite understanding if it's just a general customer service or customer experience mistake. Mm-hmm. If it's compliance or legislative, that can have such big financial impacts on you later on down the line. So make sure that's right. Get that right first.
And what was the funniest thing that occurred in the course of the deal?
I wouldn't say the course of the deal, but What was funny was that there was landlords popping up that we didn't even have on the system who were asking for rents and deposits back. And then they were forward on emails and stuff. Like, oh, yeah, you are legit. You are definitely owed that deposit back and stuff. And just every day, I just remember going into it thinking, who the bloody hell is going to walk through the door and who do we owe money to now? I've never been in a business where it was that poorly run before. But when anything happens like this, when somebody leaves the business or we buy, I always do a bit of a debrief in my head and sort of deconstruct the process and what could have gone right and what could have gone wrong and what went wrong and could we have prevented it. And in this situation, it was the unknown unknowns. We just literally we didn't know what was going to walk through the door. There was no records of it. When somebody came through, we were like just going, oh my God, there's another one. Oh, there's another one. And it was a running joke when I'd speak to Adele. It was like, great, what are we down this week? What are we down this month? Oh, three deposits and one rent, or two deposits.
So you got your 16 grand back out of profits. You got the 60 at the sale. What do you think you lost in other opportunities over those 21 months?
It's difficult because you go something, aren't you? So it's difficult to prove an unknown. But I would definitely say, because I think I was buying properties at the time myself, so I would definitely say I would either been too late or I missed a couple of properties on Rightmove. Or mm-hmm. if I was spending 2 days a week down there, I was definitely not spending 2 days a week up at HQ, like prospecting or getting on the phone to landlords. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I learned a lot from that with how to spend my time and don't spend it on crap. Basically, just make sure it's very positive mm-hmm. actions, like sort of high income generating actions rather than basically an admin task. I was quite a well-paid secretary at that point of my life for about 18 months, mm-hmm. answering calls and going in between landlords and tenants and stuff. Just, you know, I was trying my best to help support my area manager who's running the business. But mm-hmm. yeah, it was quite a difficult time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, well done. John Paul, look him up on Facebook and we'll get you back on for another one. There's a few on the list. So I'm Will Miller. This is My Property World podcast. John Paul, thank you.
Cheers. Thanks, Will.
Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together. Whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.